meeting, February 12th, Friday, 1 p.m., or shortly thereafter. And Shauna will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. Are we doing the pledge today? We don't have a flag.
Okay, Shauna will lead us in the pledge.
Our Father in Heaven, we're grateful for the many blessings that we enjoy, this beautiful weather and this beautiful country to live, that we live in. We're thankful for those that have traveled here in safety. And please help us that we might have our minds open and understanding that we might be able to do the best things in regards to the Deer Springs Ranch. For all the members and the people that live there and enjoy it, we're grateful for this opportunity and help us to use wisdom and understanding and love toward one another. Help us that we'll have that reciprocated to this meeting, that we will accomplish the things that need to be done in the right order. And we serve you things humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, I believe Dave Turley is going to call in. Did he call you or email you for instructions, Linda?
I haven't.
So I talked to him last night, and he's going to try to call in. So, Linda, why don't we go over our financials here? Appreciate you so much having this ready. Well, oh, time out. Item 2 on the agenda, approving of the meeting minutes. These were sent around, a couple of you responded at the event, so we probably need to make a motion to accept these. Okay. Ben says yeah. Double yeah.
I accept.
A motion made by Brent.
I'll make the motion.
To accept these. Do I have a second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Second by Ed. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any to oppose? Okay, good deal. Now we can go on to Linda's financial reports.
Item number 4, are you doing anything on number 3?
No, I just leave that on there to remind us what our responsibilities are. That's all right.
The information on the pages that you have there is currently we have $62,000 in the bank that the assessments that have come in so far. I was asked to keep $1,000 in the caretaker account as a buffer, and so we have $1,900 in the caretaker's account. We haven't done anything with the savings. I did not transfer anything over to the capital improvement review, and I didn't get the chance to talk. So that checking account is not working yet, or not up and working yet. But.
Okay, and you should just take 30% of everything received and deposit into there.
Right.
So.
There were some things that you and I were going to discuss on that, though, that I wanted to visit with you about, and I don't want to take time in this meeting to do that, so.
Okay.
We'll do that later. Anyway, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, we haven't blown the budget yet so far this year. Good deal.
We're only a month in.
Only a month in, but, you know, we're pretty well organized. I appreciate Linda having our finances up to date.
It's all current now. There shouldn't be any glitches.
Looks like we've received approximately 60% of our dues for the year so far.
And the end of this month is when they're officially due. Is that correct?
End of February.
So I do have a couple more checks I brought that came in the mail today. I'll pass these down.
I'm starting to hear from some of those back here, so we'll talk about that in
Anyhow, there's those.
We'll just talk to you.
They ask for a lister.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Any more discussion on finances? Tom. Okay, wonderful. Okay, item number five on the agenda. Ben, water rights, let you kind of walk through all of these items and discuss them and anything else you need to there.
Well, and let me just say, this is a packet that we're working on, so Jody Akers has followed through in going through and helping to correct addresses on all the water rights that were going to previous addresses to get them to come to PO Box 254, so she's filled out multiple applications that Bert just gave me. So I'll go through and verify these and make sure they're correct and sign them and send them in to get these updated. I know that I had also talked with Dale, and he agreed there was one or two on this list that Jody had prepared that he thought they were all on there except for a couple of water rights that he was looking into that thought that maybe, you know, she just pulled what the state record had and knew they were going to the wrong address, and so he said that that was most of them, but there was one or two he was questioning that he is researching, so I'll double check with him and we'll get those sent to the state. And that was part of our, you know, project as far as, you know, getting the water rights addresses corrected and looking at things as far as our, you know, next project, again, that Jody is interested in, has helped on, is that Leaf Spring development, but we have not, until we can get up there, you know, in springtime and in weather and look at it and try to, you know, see what the plan is and put together a budget as to what it's going to cost or whatever. That's the correcting the mailing address water system. And we had a lengthy discussion and stuff. You know, Brent, I don't know if you have future or any more comments or anything, but, you know, we've got the plans and stuff in place to work with Brent and Paul and, you know, several in getting in there as soon as weather permits and stuff before the cabins are filled and make some additions and upgrade to the headquarters system. I think the one thing that we want to work with, again, Paul, is as soon as, you know, we have good weather and can get in there without making a mess, is get Mark Fisher.
Right, I've been in contact with him.
Work with it. So we did, since the last board meeting, we did go to the Water Conservancy and make a request to work with them, and they did vote unanimously to this year just to work with us right now, not charge anything or any set budget, and kind of at least see where it goes. Mike was leaving, Mike Noel was leaving just a few days later to the
legislation
where he still is, and so he said, hey, just work with Mark right now when I get back, and we'll look at things as far as maybe a letter of understanding or whatever, but they were more than willing to, you know, give us whatever assistance and stuff. That way, that ties in with that 5F certified water operator plan. Paul is scheduled and booked and has paid his fees to go down this first week in March to St. George to finish a little bit of schooling and then take the test mainly, where then he would be a certified operator, which the Conservancy, so we had talked some that, you know, they may be our qualifier, but they would like, and Dirk's talked with them, and you know, they would still like to have Paul licensed as an operator on site, certified on site. So if they're our qualifier, but that way then we know that, you know, we've gone through it. So I think that we have now agreed and understood we are going to have the expense to, you know, again, update it, but then in the future have Paul go to a couple of days of the continuing education, whatever, and keep that maintained and work under them. And that way they're more comfortable that at least Paul has the basic certification, and, you know, either Taylor or them, you know, as far as, because you have to have a qualifier or whatever to kind of be the overseer. So we'll do that. I haven't heard anything from Dave as far as the bladder in the 40,000-gallon tank, whether has anybody heard anything on that?
Here's I just printed this. You can maybe clear that.
Prefab liner. Fab seal bid, 140 mil aqua pure bladder, 45 foot in length, 18 feet wide, 18 feet deep. Retail cost of liner, $8,700 minus a 33% discount. So the cost of liner, $5,800.
Wow.
That's good. Batten stainless steel hardware, $1,300, which is to, you know, attach it and bolt it maybe into the inlets and outlets. So total cost of liner and hardware, $7,200. Estimated shipping charge has not been added to this quote.
Is that labor?
That's not labor at all. That's just buying it and shipping it from Shawnee, Oklahoma. Would you quit? So that looks, you know, again, that doesn't include labor, but if, you know, he was talking, it wasn't a lot of labor to put in it. So this is so main.
Tell me the cost again. I didn't hear.
Well, the total was $7,200.
I have a question about the liner thing. Just, it's like buying a used car. It's going to break down. If you throw a piece in there, that's just another piece to go bad, rather than just do it right and line it. You see what I mean? I mean, throwing an extra piece in there is just, you know, it's got to be welded or however it's going to go through the outlet and the inlet. There's going to be all those spots there. And I'm pretty sure, you know, that material will go through the heat and the cold just fine, but that's just another piece in there to break down.
What's the warranty on it?
Doesn't say on this. I mean, we definitely need to look at it. That, you know, the concern that I had was, you know, how it will react with the heat and extreme temperature. You know, when we've got a foot of ice in there and that expansion, and if that ice is, you know, swelling and putting pressure against the tank, you know, will it actually pinch on that? Or as the water level will fluctuate a little bit, and you've got a hard block of ice rubbing against hard steel, will that, you know, wear through the liner over time, you know? Again, they may say, no, it won't in your lifetime, or, you know, we just need a
140 mil, is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's really thick. Yeah,
yeah, 40 mil.
40
mil.
That's really quite thick when you put it on the roofs of houses.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
And that's
awesome.
A 40 mil aqua pure. So I think that we just need to continue to look at it. So if Davey has done some additional research and gotten a bid for us, so that's great. We'll look into it and try to.
Now, and this will fit through the existing opening, is that?
Yeah, he did say that there wasn't a problem folding it up and, you know, getting it in there.
We're getting down to crunch time. And February is going to be here pretty soon. March, April is about the time you want to do that.
Right.
Well, have we heard anything back from California, from
John
Harris?
Okay. Anything from John Harris, I haven't.
He gave us some stuff that it still sounded real promising, so I think we need to follow up on that as well.
Mm-hmm. But you forward this out. I don't know if there's any downside. You know, if John Harris had this to compare and talk with his people, Vance Green's done a lot of research. Vance may say, hey, I've talked to people, and yeah, that really works good, or here's a reason not to use it. So the more people that can do a little bit of putting out feelers and doing research, I think it's good. So
I think both options appear to be a lot better than just trying to sandblast it and paint it again. Mm-hmm. And so,
what was John Harris's option?
His option is to put on some stuff that they put on swimming pools and concrete decking and stuff, and it sounded pretty good. However, remember, with John's option, it still needs to be sandblasted and all that kind of stuff, where this one doesn't.
So this is a type different
type of epoxy. Probably is still going to be cheaper than that route. And both options probably will last 20 to 40 years, where I'm not convinced that, you know, doing the same thing that we've done already twice makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Dale had a question if we could just do small sections of the tank, but I think you looked at that, Paul, and there's lots of the tank that's
right.
The pictures that you gave us, was there a picture of your tank?
I can't remember pictures of it or not, but I think I
remember. It's throughout the whole entire tank.
You know, there's not a good part on
pictures.
The tank. I gave him to a scuba dive and check out the bottom.
Because the only pictures we had was the ones that Larry had taken in 1994 after it had just been done. It looked great.
So I looked at the pictures just down into where the ladder was, and you can kind of see that wall right there.
Okay. So that's, we'll keep making progress. I think that, you know, late March. We still got 30 days to try to work this, but we need to get something on order about, in the next month to have it here in time.
Well, those are good questions. I mean, we need to find out if, what kind of, you know, how to handle abrasiveness and or any abrasion and you know, just a few things like that.
Well, and it's plastic. It's one of those things where if it does wear a hole, you can take rubber cement. Well, it has to be that approved stuff, but you just patch it.
Yeah. I wonder if anybody would know. I mean, this stuff is made for water tanks, potable water tanks. But if it, you know, sometimes when you have things in rubbery type environments, it does affect the taste of the water.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just going through garden hoses and stuff.
Did he say 46 by 18?
45 feet long by 13 feet wide.
Oh, okay.
I think about 13 foot diameter for that.
Yeah, okay.
And I think you measured that. You gave me measurement.
13 foot.
13. Yeah, I thought you said 18 earlier.
Yeah, no.
Okay. 13. Grandiose. That's okay, neat. Keep working on it, Ben. Any other discussion on item 5?
I think that's pretty much the overall report.
Okay, item 6. Don't really have any updates. We went over a lot of things in the last meeting on grazing plans and such, and so the only thing would be to continue to say, Paul, whenever things are maybe to the point where we're down to 6 inches of snow or something where we're reasonable to go start working on fences, we'd like to work on primarily the fences that are going to be south of the Scoot and Paw Road. Is where we need our first action.
And Paul has talked about, now that you can see the top of the fence, at least to know where it's at, some of them that he may, just at least to get roughly familiar, he
may
snowball
maybe you can start now. Just doing the top wire.
Yeah. I'll make 6 inches.
To just make a quick write up and assess which ones even exist and where they are. You know, he's never even been along, that he may still get out on the snowmobile.
Okay.
With the fencing needs, did you want to mention anything about the bids or the quotes that I gave you for the electric fence for the meadow?
We should talk about that. The one brand name that I knew and had used successfully in the past was the Gallagher Chargers.
Right.
So, and they looked pretty reasonably priced. I think $350 for the higher Joule rating. If you have to have the higher Joule rating pretty much to use the fiber cable, you know, that's really easy to use, but it's, otherwise you have to use a solid metal. And so I think that looked like a good one to go with. Was it 15 joules, the highest one, or was it 30?
The one that I saw was 8, but I mean, that was $399. You go to $699, you get into 12 and 15 joules.
I think you're talking about we ought to spend a little more, because like you said, when you're paying the money, you get the higher jewelry and a better battery.
Right.
And if you get one that then it's always dead, and then it's a pain.
This is something that could be mobile, too. We can move it from the metal.
Right. We're going to bring it in.
I would say get like the 650. I don't think a 7 or 8 joule is going to cut the mustard.
Right.
We'll be running some long footage up there.
Okay.
So
I have to go ahead to purchase this, or do we want to do some wire and post too?
No, I think to get that, because we talked about.
I still think Crosby's has got a pretty good supply of wire and all those other things. You can check it out. But
is this electric fence?
Yeah. I think when I did fences before, electric fences, I don't like the little rubber posts that you just jam in. They're too short. They're only about this tall when they're in the ground. And you can't make any corners with them. They just will bend over and such. So I still would get, you know, the T-posts.
Get T-posts with the caps that go on them, or the thick clips that go right on?
The clips that just go on the sides.
Right.
So you can put like 3 or 4 of them. And And you can go really long distances as long as the terrain isn't going up or down, you know, so that it leaves gaps.
Right.
I mean, you can go a T-post and then go 80 feet and then another T-post, so it doesn't take very many T-posts. And then you can really tighten the wire tight.
Right.
Part of making the fence work good is that the wire's tight enough that when they hit it with their face, they, you know, it stays there
right.
enough to give them a good, you know, taste of the old electrical. So that's what I'd recommend you use.
Okay.
Okay?
So, okay.
Okay. Okay, so we need to approve that by the board, or we
no,
just
it's in the budget.
It's in the budget. Okay. We just need to shop it online, you know, Amazon.
Right.
And you know, and price this.
This week I'll email you guys a couple of things that I found, and we can just go from there. And
great. And just a reminder, one of the things that weakens the shortens the life cycle of those fences is when they're continually shorting out. And so, which will happen from time to time, we'll have a storm or something, you'll get a line down or a line that the cows have pushed out or something, but if it's shorting out for 10 days in a row, it's going to have
right.
a big effect on the life expectancy of the charger. So
well, that and that when the grass grows up, that's why with that sprayer, and go along with the ATV
all right.
the Durano, and just spray some herbicide right under it so that you know the grass doesn't grow up
right.
good because then it starts shorting out.
Well, and even it's not bad though because in the meadow I don't think you'll have to do that because the cows will still
eat
and they'll eat right.
as far as they can reach.
Yeah. So it works out pretty good.
Right.
Okay, roads and fire protection. Brent.
All right. On the road maintenance, obviously there's you can't see any of the road. they're there. The big concern I have right now in road maintenance, and I emailed you guys about it, and that's the, and I don't know where we are in our Title V.
I have an update for you and a new assignment for you.
Woo!
Okay, remember they need to GPS them and stuff, and so I don't think we're going to get anything done until they can drive.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Up Slide Canyon. But they came back with this list of 50 questions that they want us to answer. And a lot of it we already answered already. And Harry Barber, was a little bit apologetic, saying, you know, sorry, I've got to have you fill answer all this out, type up a new document, and I did have my secretary type this that I can email to you,
okay.
So that you wouldn't have to retype this, but could just type the answers. He said, if you think that the question is already answered in the application, you can say already answered in section 12 of the application submitted, or something. You don't have to redo it all, but. I'd bequeath this to you and will email you the accompanying document.
Cool.
I had, you know, grand thoughts that before the board meeting I'd be able to actually do that myself. But
I'll take care of it. Email me this stuff, but I'll have this and be prepared.
So I think everything's still looking good, but, you know, just from everything that I've seen, it's like a 6-month process.
Sure.
And so
I did tell you the next
Well, anyway, my concern, and that's why the first thing is about the Title V, and that is that the student paw, have you guys broken out there lately?
You scared me off.
Yeah, it's not good. It's melted down quite a bit, but there were 6, 7, and 8 foot piles of snow on either side of the road from the county plowing.
Yeah.
And that water doesn't have anywhere to go, so it comes right onto the road, and then it creates a lake, or a river, and it gets into the ruts and falls down the ruts. Anyway, we have some people who continue to try to drive out there in the two-wheel drive vehicles.
Well, and let me mention, and Shauna can add to this, remember that the county was working to do an en banc appeal to Judge McGiff's, or not Judge McGiff's, but the circuit court decision, and they had submitted that. Last week it was approved that they did accept to hear that, and just kind of statistics-wise, see what happened is we had 3 of the 12 judges that ruled, and 2 of them were not supportive of the county, and 1 of them was supportive. So that the county lost that suit on a 2-1 vote. And so the appeal process is that you send it back and you ask for the entire circuit of judges, which are 12, to vote on it. In the meantime, one of the judges that was really in supportive of it retired, so the county was somewhat concerned that maybe this would not go through, but last week it was approved. So that means that at least 7 of the 12 judges agreed that it should be heard again, and these are the same 12 judges that are going to hear it. And so if 7 of the 12 agreed that it probably needs to be revisited, statistics are about only 10% of the time when this appeal is made do they agree to rehear it, and so that did happen, and about 90% of the time when they agree, they overturned the decision because obviously it took a majority of them to agree to rehear it. So there's maybe some indication there that they, when they rehear it, would also agree that to overturn the decision. So, and that's out about another 90 days till they would rehear it. But the minute that goes through, if it goes through, the county has committed that they will jump right on Stephen Paul Road again. So that's a big favor, I guess a big win in favor of us seeing some county maintenance activities going on. In the meantime, they still have said, hey, I hope you keep calling the BLM and asking them why their guys haven't done anything. And we've had 2 or 3 members that have talked to me, talked to the county, and have been directed that way, and I think at least a couple of them have sent letters to the BLM. And remember, the BLM agreed to send down their forest crew, but that never happened, maybe primarily because of some early weather, but still, nonetheless, it never happened. So anyway, that's kind of the update there. Harry Barber does say when weather's good, they still do agree that they need to bring their guys down, but it's kind of a light maintenance that they would plan on doing. But I think we can count on whenever we have our official spring thaw that the BLM will at least come and run the roads and do some maintenance on it. And I think the greater guys, our guys that are familiar with our roads, used to work on our roads before, and I think their skill level and equipment level is such that they could do a good job. So we have several avenues of hope for some spring maintenance that we continue to push on.
I was just curious, on the rehearing that the 12 judges, you're saying 7 did vote for it, or we just know at least 7 was a majority? Did they tell us, did this pass, fail?
7 are the ones that agreed to rehear it. Out of the
Does that mean that 5 voted to not rehear it?
McConnell.
No, I don't know that we know that. In other words, it was 8 judges. We know at least 7 did. I don't think we have any indication that maybe there were a couple that didn't even vote. Maybe there were. But we at least know that we had 7 positive supporting them.
That's why I just wondered if it. I mean, if it's 10 to the same people who voted against it would mean different to me than if 7 did. But
yeah,
I mean,
more than likely
it passed.
You'd think that there was 2 of them that the same two that voted no would have voted no again, but so.
Well, it's encouraging. My thing to think that we could be on back on our roads anywhere from 4 to 6 months, which is a major feat for not just the, not just King County, but for the whole state, the whole western United States. It's a big, major deal. So on the 23rd, which is on Tuesday, we're going to go to the state capitol up in Rotunda. We're going to have a big rally there. And everybody that wants to go on the 23rd, at 1 o'clock, they've even sent down, they're even going to send us a little bus down. A guy that owns bus things is going to send us a bus to pick up people who can't drive us, and we'll charge them $32, that's just what its costs are, to pick people up to go to the Rotunda. We need to be in there and support it before legislation, before they leave legislation, to show them that we are in favor and support of this on the, when it's called Take Back Utah. But we, 1 o'clock on the 23rd, and anyway, so if you want to go, let me know, but we, some of us are going to drive anyway, but you know, it's important that we're there to show our support there. It's those who show up that get counted. It's when we don't show up that the environmental groups are outnumbered and they have to vote for who shows up.
There was a House bill being debated on the floor yesterday when I was there for the hole in the rock road, and that was still unsettled by the time I had to leave. But
what was the issue?
The I'm not sure who, National Parks, something like that, has a $500,000 set aside to build a visitor center out near Hole in the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have something like $200,000 to improve the road in between the visitor center. For those of you who have driven that, it's kind of a washboardy road, and so my understanding is they're going to chip seal or hard surface it in some way, so it would really change the experience and increase the traffic there quite a lot, I think. But they don't have authority, you know, to make that $200,000 approval, and they won't put in the $500,000 visitor center unless that's done. And so
part of that runs King County too,
right? So in any case, you know, that bill is to simply deal with that road, and it wasn't so much dealing with the authority of the maintenance on it as the authority to keep the funding available for it while the road issue is being resolved. And so but that was kind of interesting thing that I think would be a nice attraction in our area. Okay, any other discussions on roads?
Well, all I was going to say is that I'm not quite, I would really like, I want Kane County to obviously win this so we can get back to living a normal life. I'm not quite as optimistic that it will happen.
Yeah.
And so
normal. I can tell you this, though. I think there's no question the county's not going to do anything until something like this happens.
Without question. And so my,
we need to keep the pressure on the BLM.
My thing right now, and my concern is access to Deer Springs.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is at some point in time during this next, the course of this next, the runoff, we might need to make some emergency repairs in the road,
right,
to make, to keep it accessible.
My guess is that even though the Title V application may not be perfected, that if we meet with the BLM, they'll give us approval to do those like they did last time.
Exactly, and so I'm not totally freaked out about it. I'm just getting the point where I'm going to be prepared that we take care of things that we have to take care of things just to keep our access.
As it gets closer to this time, we ought to try to see For example, if they send down some blade guys and they're here and they're willing to do a lot of blade work, but they don't have any dump trucks with them, you know, if we can augment what they're doing versus
taking over.
Well, you know, I'd rather help them do their job than.
So believe it or not, King County the other day, and it was Dion who did it. They've had a policy.
Stop the recording.
They have a policy of not putting the blade onto the dirt. Okay.
Yeah.
But Dion did straighten up the road a little bit. It lasted for about 2 hours, and then somebody drove on it.
Well, that's what I was wondering. At this time of year, the main thing is this puddling and the run. Now, do we under get the permission where even if we're not moving? Well, again, you can knock the tops off the ruts, but to run back all the way back to Scootum Paw. But the main thing is some of those areas where it'll puddle, you know, to take and dig a ravine to drain it so that it's not ponding in the middle of the road, so it'll dry out a little bit. But if it's puddled 8 inches deep, some of those puddles will be there for a month straight.
Well, then
everybody goes through it, it'll just splash.
That puddle on just the other side of Timber Mountain, that's a classic example. Now, I have a shovel with me whenever I go. Unfortunately, I try to only travel when it's frozen. But if I do go out during the course of the day when it's melted off, I take a shovel with me. And you can do a remarkable amount of work with a shovel in, 15 minutes. To start.
I need a trash pump.
I've got two.
that's what you should bring.
but you're right. Anyway, I'm just looking ahead, and we want to be prepared to maintain access to Deer Springs, and so I don't think it'll take a lot of work, but we might need to do a little bit of work with shovels, backhoe, something like that, just to keep on top of it. No sense even talking about the Johnny Brown Road because it's under that snow. Snow removal and drifting, we've been pretty lucky. We had some pretty bad drifting along the airstrip. Paul straightened it up really in a hurry. And haven't had anything since then.
The thing to do with that is stay on top of it. Was out at night,
well,
I think two or three times during the big snowstorm.
This is the first year that I know of, other than maybe Grant's personal efforts, that we've maintained and stayed on top of that intersection there through the winter. And that probably makes all the difference.
Yeah.
That makes a huge difference. Yeah.
So I think that's been good. And, I don't know if we're, the county files out to Johnny Brown.
Oh, they stop right at the airstrip.
They've been stopping at the airstrip. The reason they stopped.
Make it snow.
Last year they didn't.
Well, it's that Beller's not out on the photo.
Beller's not there.
And Beller's not out there, which worked out really good for us because it saves us so much time that the tourists, and I called you a tourist one day, the tourists, because she tried to go up slide. The tourists, they get turned around right there at Meadow Canyon. Instead of all the way out of the
they get stuck in, what's the creek?
Lick Wash.
Before they even get to pull it. But it's far enough for the ranch out by then. They walk back.
Yeah.
And they go pull them out.
It's great that there's a big berm of snow there. And it's turning people around. However, Paul, it's a good thing Paul's fluent in Russian because he had a Russian who wanted to argue with him about getting to Bryce Canyon. But
wanted to go to Bryce.
But the drifting and everything, the row, everything is
gone.
What we have open is in good shape. Okay, and we're kind of at that breakover point where we look at it and go, well, maybe we ought to leave about this much snow and pack it down so we got ice rather than have it turn into mud.
Yeah.
But it's been over 40 degrees out there every day.
Last couple storms, I think we got 4-6 inches. I just left it.
Yeah. And that was actually the best move. So, but overall, my big concern is the Scootum Paw. And then the other thing I'm going to do diligently when the runoff starts is I will be looking at every road I can get to and make sure that I'll take care of the problem before it becomes a problem.
Right.
So.
Awesome.
Well, we sure appreciate Paul's effort and your effort, Brent, and I think we've probably got the best maintenance we've ever had and the worst storms we've ever had.
That's true.
So that's great.
You guys are really earning you. All of these stories, like the Russians that he had to argue with and stuff, that's the kind of stuff that the VLM needs to know about is happening out there. The shovels that he does to help drain off the water and things like that's what the VLM needs to know about.
And I've been talking to them about that.
Well, I mean, to write about them so that it's a record type of thing for this hearing coming up.
Well, that's the other thing. Anyway, the other thing is we had that big snow cat out there.
We should sustain it. You did go to it.
Anyway, the snow cat was a little bit of a disappointment. Worst conditions possible. Didn't perform.
It's a little more of an industrial version.
Yeah, it is. I lived right next to Powder Mountain Ski Resort and up in the Ogden Valley. And I've done cat skiing, cat snowboarding, and the whole nine yards. And the machines that they used were the passenger models that were that weighed about a third.
The ones that I've checked with them several times, and it goes really good in this loose snow. But if you look at it, I mean, it probably weighs a fourth or less of what that one did. And also, its tracks are wider.
Yeah, like a Tucker.
Than that. I mean, its tracks come, they're only that far apart in the belly of the machine.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a lot more likely to float on top of the snow.
Well, and this machine weighed 16,000 pounds, and it...
But it's made for grooming
it is.
Compacted trails.
It is, and it sunk way in, and you know the only way to get in summer had to drop the crew box off, you know, the whole nine yards to get it to go anywhere. Anyway, I'm still not. I still think that we want to try to do something with winter activities out there.
Yeah.
I still think that, and I'm willing to put my money into it. I still think getting an adequate functioning snowcat for that place would be worthwhile. Simply to run it around and groom trails for snowmobiles and stuff like that.
Cross country. It left two huge trails all the way up Meadow Canyon.
Yeah, and if they would have been just about 6 inches wider, where your skis on your snowmobile would have fit inside, that would have been perfect. But as it was, you were going like this.
Oh, the snow.
Yeah, snow. But anyway, I think that in the future we should do something with a snowcat. I think that we need to increase the wintertime use out there. I had a very long discussion with Dale the other day when he and Larry were out there, and I honestly, fervently believe that we should try to increase winter activity simply because when the snow is gone, we don't know those people were there. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they leave really, literally, when you talk about leave no trace, they leave no trace, you know. And so, anyway, I'm a big fan of it, and it was the best and worst day to have that snowcat out there. Worst possible condition.
It was a good test for it.
Yeah, it was perfect
and also,
test for it.
I mean, I think that's a good experience, and we just need to maybe keep looking for a little different unit.
We have members that would like to come up. When they call me, they ask about to cross-country ski and snowmobile.
There's a lot of things that you could do instead of shutting the ranch down in October, November.
Well, one of the things that I think we need to do, and I've had a couple of members ask me about, could I park some snowmobiles at the ranch? And I think, yeah, I told them, sure, sounds good, but we, you know, ideally we need some kind of a covered shed area where they could at least, we could say, hey, we've got room for snowmobiles, whoever wants this year can park them down there, and then they can come and go as they please.
Like a pavilion down by headquarters?
Yeah.
Good idea.
Except for you were going to use that for a shop or something?
Well, multi-purpose.
Multi-purpose. Paul and I were thinking, he got all that stuff out that are well cattle guards, except he'll be standing in mud up to his knees when he does it.
That would be another example.
Yeah, but it would be really great that you could have a pavilion that you used all year long for ranch activities. In the wintertime, literally, something that's got a roof over it, you could put tarps around the outside, put a bullet heater in there, make it comfortable enough to actually work inside.
Yeah.
you know, where you and where you don't have to be crawling in the mud. Trust me, I'm on in the snow and in the mud all the time, and so when you're crawling under something to, you know, do whatever kind of maintenance you're doing or fit, you know, repair, it'd be so much nicer to be laying on a creeper that would, you know, you could slide under something and get back out. And,
you know. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one thing I think
just don't right spot.
If you get a chance, you know this new Kanab feed store?
Mm-hmm.
They've got some a covering they made for their hay. You might look at that. But it was all seconds or thirds or fourths or whatever, reject lumber from the lumber mill here in Fredonia. And, you know, some things like that where, you know, even things like our tractor and our graders ought to be parked where they're somewhat sheltered from storms, I think. And we've got the space, the materials. If we buy these reject materials, probably wouldn't be too much.
What's that? Have you been in that shop, that store?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
What's his name that did the Mullen Forest Church, Norris Church?
Mm-hmm.
He has a bunch of logs that he's been getting up on Cedar Mountain for firewood. But they're good, long, straight, you know, Douglas firs that would make work just fine for, you know, pole barns and stuff, and which is the same as what they used on this one down there at the feed store. So they're a little hard to build in the winter, but, you know, we ought to start looking at some things like that, too. Because, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying about the pavilion, and I think that's fine to use. We need a pavilion and stuff, but we still need a place where oily, dirty things can go.
The main thing is
up dry too.
That we need is a flat cement surface. Even if it was, you know, I mean, honestly, if there's not enough money, I'd almost rather have a flat cement surface with no roof than a roof and a dirt floor.
Absolutely, because you can clear the snow off.
Clear the snow, but when, you know, we talked today and stuff, you know, we may have the clutch going out of the Kubota, you know, and stuff. We have to do heavy maintenance. But just to bring everything in and drain the oil and check the stuff and change it, you've got to have a hard floor. But that's what he's fighting. You know, you can't get anything straight to weld it when you're out there in the dirt and you're trying to pop it up and kind of look by the eyeball. Something that's flat and true, which isn't that much, even if it's a cement thing, and then we build a, you know, a building over it, or we go in the tractor shed that's there and grade that out and put some gravel in there and cement.
Well, the materials for this one down here, I think, were less than $6,000, and it's a 6 bay, 38 feet deep.
Well, we don't need that.
So.
No, but if we had, even if we had a 3 bay, where you could have the grader in one, the Kubota in another one, and a couple of pickups or the implements,
snowmobiles and stuff like
that. Right, exactly. So, well,
you need to rent a bay out.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to bring their snowmobiles up.
But if you had something like that, and I don't know that it would cost all that much more to build a 6 or a 3.
Right.
And you could cement the floor on two of the six, and
well, see, Paul and I were talking about this, and I've got plenty of concrete block to do it, but we're talking about actually having a pouring a pad, digging a hole, pouring a pad, making a pit, so you can actually walk down in the pit, work underneath. Right. When you pull the vehicle off, you put a boards down so that nobody can fall in it or nobody can get in it. And I've got plenty of concrete block that I could donate that we could make the pit out of, you know. And then a guy could get down there and work on it, change the oils, and stand up, not have to be sliding around. And I see
where
a whole.
Where are you thinking putting
that? Well, we talked a couple different places, but we're looking at. We want to try to look at it somewhere that's close to the ranch, but out of the way, or headquarters, but out of the way. And right now, the best place that we could think of that's not being used, other than for parking, is over there where the wood chipper is.
That's a great place for it.
That would be a really nice place to put it. And if we made the building attractive enough that it wasn't an eyesore type thing, then, you know, and then that's another spot to be easy to keep the snow away so you could actually, you could plow into it and get things in and get
I think if you leave the opening, facing east, you know, that you could make a nice, you know, three-sided pole.
Yeah, if you look at, again, that one down there, it would be a perfect match for our ranch.
No,
for winter
sun. Kind of a south.
But yeah, and yeah. See, the other thing is I've got, I don't obviously produce what they produce over here, but I always have rough cut stuff that comes off my mill that I don't, that I would be more than happy to donate to what's going on in relation to if we wanted to do a kind of a rustic, you know, I mean a three-sided shed. You know, I mean, I'm always cutting enough stuff that we could have something that we could have rustic siding. We stained and you know, got a uniform color out of them that looked nice. And
right.
So, anyway, that's all I got.
Okay, great.
And this adds $100. One of those. They charge $100 to take one of those pallets, put the lumber on. So it's not more expensive. You know what I mean? So you could probably do some pretty good stuff with that. But it is rough. Some are not exactly true. That's why they're not quite.
Well, one of the things that I did
work.
One of the things that I did for a guy from BLM is he had moved down here and he had a bunch of lumber that had ultimately
twisted
and whatever. And so I put it. Obviously, I couldn't keep it the same size, but I put it on the mill and made square lumber for him.
Good.
You know, it was pretty simple. Took a little bit of time to set it up and cut it, but it was. But, it, you know, and so you could actually take some rough cut stuff that they had. I could put it on that mill over there, and we could square it up and have a nice square.
That's what we needed, yeah.
So.
Okay, item number 8, Shauna.
Okay, well, I like Brent's idea. I think that was great on this weather stuff. Yeah, in fact, I thought that when I took our family, we went out to do sledding. And we need to have a place where we can just sled on a hill, you know. That road going down into the ranch is awesome when you come down that big hill. You can sled almost a whole mile.
Well, right at headquarters, my kids have been sledding all winter. Right down where they had the dozer.
Oh, yeah.
There is some perfect spots right there.
Yeah, Clark cut us a perfect sled. Not that I'm into sledding.
Another that, and it's a lot of fun. Well, I like that one because, you know what, I drive down the road, pick them up, and drive back to the top.
Oh, they
can go forever.
That's a wonderful spot. That's a wonderful spot.
If you know, if we had a planned deal or, hey, you know, bring your sleds and your kids and just come on out, have a barbecue, I mean, try
to make...
When
our snow is, though, probably.
Well, trust me, there's snow out there. There's been snow there for months.
I've got a ski run in past cabin number 6.
Yeah.
Well, see this is another thing you have to think about. If we had a snowcat or had something like that, we could groom the road going up to the upper cabins.
Yeah.
And that would be a long, great downhill, almost like a bobsled run
and
if you did it right. And then you just come out and you hit the flat there and that's where you slow down. And I think that Deer Springs is so underutilized in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
That we ought to make an effort to make it so people want to come there in the winter. You know, we got two wonderful cabins. You know, I keep thinking about how much it would take to actually get cabin 1 so it was a year-round cabin.
Oh.
So somebody, if they wanted to come out with 20-something people, could come out there, you know, sled up and down, snowmobile up and down.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful out there.
So,
well, there's two cabins available right now that haven't been used in a month.
Board should go up there.
Great. Okay, anyway, so, and then, well, we haven't really done too much about the working on the activities yet. We're waiting for the board.
That's the question on number item B.
Yeah.
Should I be getting payments for,
you just got it. So, what they do is they keep a record of the time and how long they were there.
And then pay once a year.
And, right, and he just ended up paying, so he was able to collect.
What was the payment? So
it was $140.
They charge $5 per person.
Mm-hmm.
And which seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that was our agreement.
And They've kept track of the number of people.
Along with that, this year was a lot different than the year prior. You know, they knew about the rules, 25 miles an hour through the ranch. I didn't see anybody. I mean, they respected deer springs, which is kind of what we want.
Yeah, no. They did ask me, said it was no big deal, but I think they would prefer to unload at the gravel pit rather than at headquarters. And they said that somebody had told them, no, you need to unload at headquarters. And I didn't know if there was some reason for that.
What was the discussion on that?
I didn't say no, you need to do this. I think I would prefer if they unloaded at headquarters. It's an extra mile and a half, more or less, so I can kind of keep track of it.
Well, I talked to several people one time. I don't know if it's part of their group or not. And I what they had done is they parked right in the gravel pit, and I'd gone down there with my backhoe to load someone up. I told them I'd run down there and load some leach rock for them, or some riprap for them. And I couldn't get to it because there were all these cars parked there, or trucks and trailers and stuff. And so when they came back and I ran into them, I said, hey, listen, you're more than welcome to park or be here and do whatever, but I prefer that you don't park right here where we're loading stuff. You can park a little further out. In fact, where Paul Brushoff down there would have worked perfectly, where somebody could park out away.
And that's where we're talking about RV pads.
So. Yeah.
I think my thought was, okay, they're coming to the ranch, they're going to drive through the ranch, you bring them down to headquarters, that's kind of like a starting place.
Mm-hmm.
If they were interested in property, you see what I mean? The store's there, we had some people come into the store and buy
some
sodas.
That's probably some good aspects.
And there's a bathroom there.
Well, let's just leave it there then. They didn't have any big ruffled feathers about it.
Only
right
at the headquarters.
Part of it is, you know, when people say, well, who was parked up there? And Paul says, I don't know. Was it them? I don't know. And Brandon right. talked to them and doesn't know, is it their group or not? You know, you don't want to be unwelcoming. So if they pull in the ramps, then, you know, it does help us, you know, track who's where a little better.
Yeah, they
can you talk about, too, Shauna, the cookouts and reservation fees, and if it's on the website? Prepay for it now.
It is. Would you like me to pull it up so you can see it?
I haven't seen it, but Nancy said she was going to get it.
No, I tried to visit it with Melinda, and she
I don't know that we need
before.
It pulled up, but if it's when they go down through, check this, do you want to do this, they can sign up right then, so that's great. And it authorizes off their credit card the same as their reservation mm-hmm. fee, so hopefully, then that will give us a little more pre-planning, and you're also, we have a flyer that's going out, yes, no,
about
that goes out, when somebody makes a reservation, you send them out a confirmation or something.
Yes, it's on there, and I attached a flyer to that, and it's already gone out to all the membership this December.
But when they actually make a reservation, does a flyer go out to them at
yes.
that time?
Yes.
Okay. And did we need to revise that flyer? Is it all?
No, it was a new one. Okay. It's what they worked on.
Great. So I think that's our.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
We were talking about the motorcycle races, and we had. Does anybody remember the name of the group that was coming with all
the Desert Foxes.
Desert Foxes. I'd like to know if they are planning to come or how to get a hold of them.
Probably just go on the internet and Google them and see.
You're looking for White. If he's still involved in the organization, it was Dale White's son. Years ago, this wasn't the last time, but I know he's still the one that called and stuff. When they came the first time, I was the president. We set up back in whenever that was, 10, 12 years ago. And it's Dale, you know Dale. Dale's son, and I don't remember his first name, but he's kind of...
I think it's Frank.
Frank White.
Frank White.
So we should be able to somewhere there in the, you know, northern Utah.
Okay.
Is where he lived.
And well, I'll check with that and see, because I need to know if they're coming, if they're planning to, what date that is, so we can kind of work our things around this.
Well, is that something that you can call them and say, we'd like to host you guys?
Right.
Or is that something?
You can contact them and say, you know, they have not been there every year, but it's been a couple of years now.
They're either have or would be very near setting their annual calendar, so that would be good.
Yeah, if you just Google Desert Fox and call around and whoever you talk to, ask for Frank.
Okay, I'll find that. And then the RV pads, we can work on them probably and that'll be another month or two before we can even get to the ground to dig. So I've got the prices already for doing at least.
I love that optimism.
Five feet of snow at my house.
That's flooding weather.
Almost in a month.
And it's cold out there. And Paul and I were discussing it this morning, and we were just trying to laugh and think how long it'll be until the snow melts. Now, here's what you have to know. I shoveled off one of my 40-foot containers yesterday. It's actually up off the ground a little bit on railroad ties. When I was done, I could step directly from the container onto that bank of snow.
That's what my house is like up there, too.
Oh.
Up above, it's like...
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, keep that optimism.
And you can't look for a propane tank underneath it because it's melted and it's fallen down to a solid block of ice. I decided that maybe wasn't a good idea.
You know what? Cambridge, not that much snow.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, we saw it.
Their springs is a real anomaly.
Well, the storms came through just at the perfect angle, and it went through... And they went through, they went over Cannonville, they went over Henryville, the roof on the fire station in Henryville collapsed. It's just a line. But Deer Springs is...
I keep telling Dale, quit praying for more. Reservoirs are going to
collapse. I do think one of the things that everybody should really be appreciative of is the surface water collection work that was done. That is going to pay dividends.
Last year we didn't get enough to even fill them.
Exactly. This year it's going to be impressive.
We were at 126% as of last Monday. But
I thought it was 170.
Oh, maybe it is.
187% was said on the news.
Wow. Oh, we're just rolling in.
It'll be green.
Well, they were talking about not having enough snow up north, and so I called up a couple of my friends of mine and offered to send them some.
I have a truckload if anybody wants it.
There's almost, even the big mountains up north are there to halfway up.
I have a truckload if anybody wants it.
Paul's been peddling it all over town.
I'll deliver it.
Okay, anything else on this side of my eight, Shauna?
No. I've got Utah Desert Fox this year. There really isn't any place to contact them.
I'll find them.
They may have an email.
It's not on their website.
I'll find them. It's okay. Yeah, I'll get it.
It's Foxes.
On 8, on 8, whatever this is, about promoting winter activities.
Yeah.
We are going to put something in a newsletter. And try and push it hard next year by like October, November.
Right.
And let people know that there are two cabins available all winter long.
Great.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, at number 9?
Yeah, we talked a lot about the Title 15 road work that we'd like to do. The problem is just that I don't know if people are covered. It exclusively, in the exclusion section it says that, we will not pay for loss or damage caused directly or indirectly by any of the following. Such loss or damage is excluded regarding of the cause or the event that contributes and currently or in any sequence of the loss. And B is any earth movement. So this policy is probably not going to cover us if we're going to do Title V work on the road.
Good to know.
Now, it does go on and say, such as, an earthquake, subsistence, blah, 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 blah. But the problem, and the problem is I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an insurance man, but it says any earth movement. not specifically an earthquake or a mudslide or...
Lawyers would jump on
yeah, they look, I told you, any... So we're going to have to get a binder or something.
Or we're going to have to be incognito.
Or we're going to have to stop talking about it.
It's a good thing when that guy said he got you, but he didn't dent the ground and broke some earth.
Anyway, that's unfortunate, but at least now we know where we
stand. I wonder about what's in compensation about the review meeting.
Well, it would our employees.
If he was...
You do have a workman's comp.
I'll talk to somebody in Kane County. We'll get some Kane County stickers to tonight.
There you go.
Next, you got Dirk. The next one's yours.
Yes, I talked to got some legal counsel on this, and this is the way legal counsel advised us. The only value of a liability waiver is if you offer something and they choose to not accept what you offer. So in other words, if you had somebody that says, for an extra $10, I can pay for this additional insurance while I ride this horse, but I choose to not pay that $10 and waive the fact that you offered me this insurance, the liability waiver is basically a great waiver of something that we're offering. That there's no legal validity to something that we can say something such as I release all liability, blah, 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 and take it as a personal liability. There still may be some intrinsic benefit to the fact that somebody signed that, and as of their own word, they may say, yeah, as far as generically something across the entire ranch, he felt that would cause more problems and more issues with the fact that it would almost be impossible to manage, and then the one exception of somebody's cousin, friend, relative, or a tourist that came on the ranch and they hadn't signed it would create more liability for us than the 99% of the people that we did get to sign it. So he felt pretty strongly two things. Number one, there's no purpose of a liability waiver unless you have a specific scheduled activity that somebody can come up to and sign, okay, I'm getting on the horse, or I'm getting on the snowmobile, or I'm doing something, and even in that account they can only waive something that we offered to provide them. We can charge the extra cost for it for them, so we'd have to kind of think along those lines. So if we got back into the horse riding activities, or we got into some activity which was kind of a check-in type of a thing, there's probably still some basis for looking into that. But other than that, generically...
it's worthless to have a final piece of paper.
Well, yeah.
Well, does this have any correlation to the ATV forms that I send out and have people sign?
I was unaware of an ATV form, so...
There's a liability waiver that I have everybody that have ATVs and motorcycles. I have them fill it out.
It's probably not enforceable, but it may have some intrinsic value.
Right.
The question is, how do you know...
How do you enforce it?
Well, how do you know who's signing it and who's not signing it?
Well, here's...
So basically, if you see somebody checking in, they've got some ATVs in the back of their pickup truck, you hand them the form, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it would probably work out just as well if there was... something that we sent out with the reservation package, but so anyway, I don't know. Maybe email me that form and I'll forward it on to the attorney and say, what do you think about this one? Do we need to tweak it up? But more than likely, it's meaningless in any kind of a legal setting.
Dirk, I've seen a number of different places where they have a sign that says ATV, Riot Reynolds, whatever.
Riot's
on risk, or the swing pole, whatever thing. and it is worthless. But the people go in with a mental attitude
right.
that they realize that there is no insurance,
yeah.
that I'm not paying
and
anything.
So
if something happens, it's my responsibility.
Yeah, I personally don't want to drive into a ranch and have 50 of those signs every time.
Well, and I think part of it,
we can send out something with our reservations and to, you know, understand. You're coming on the
You're coming to a cattle ranch.
At your own risk, you know.
Yeah.
You know, rattlesnake bites you, sorry.
40 miles to town.
You know.
Killer donkey attacks.
And, yeah, killer donkeys. You and all of your guests understand by checking yes to this, which you can't make a reservation unless you do, or something. So we could have something.
We need at least a warning sign, probably, that says that, you know, when they come in, if there's a lot of tourists or other people visit.
Yeah, one of the things was
so that. No, even if it's 20, even if it's a pond, if there's just something that says, you know, that kind of makes them realize that it's not, we're not responsible. We can't be responsible. They could always, everything you have, always they can jump over. It doesn't matter what
right.
you've got. There's always a jump over. There's a loophole everywhere. But that at least makes them aware that we're not being responsible.
Well, what would you guys like to do? So
and I
stand in the legal aspect, but what do you want to do?
You have the choice. Remember when you go and you rent a vehicle? You go to a car rental, and you can either take their insurance
right.
or refuse the insurance, and that's the third thing. They get by it that way. Oh, we're not responsible. If you crash, you didn't take our insurance. Instead of going your insurance, or you go for the car. That's exactly
there's always a lawyer that
but
finds
there's always something that jumps
well,
out.
Well, that's a perfect example of a valid liability waiver. You offered them something to insure their liability, and they waived that. That's a perfect example of a valid liability waiver. But anything that doesn't have the offering for protections that they can waive is not legally binding.
So if we had a motocross outfit to offer any ATV rider and said, would you like the helmet, you know, forearm, you know, a shin and, you know, foot pads and all this and that and the other.
We have bubbles for sale.
Yeah, no. And then, but we offered it to them, you know.
Well, the main thing, and I don't know exactly about protection equipment, but the main thing that he said was they waived their protection, the liability insurance and so forth. So
you could make a generic one that covers everything in the ranch. You could just say, you know, as long as you're here, this is we offer protection, and this is what it will cost you while you're here. And if you don't want it, then you're at your own.
But I think I really think that things have evolved in the legal system and everything that at Deer Spring we say, look, we're a cattle ranch. If we do ATVs, you know, we have on our website, you know, like Anasazi Tour, and so that we could say, hey, we don't do that. We have a concessionaire that has insurance that we would encourage you to work with. You brought your own? Well, then you brought your own. You brought your own rescue. I think
sure.
even putting up signs. I could go out here to Potter's Pond and drown, or I could go to Calvin Johnson's ranch and drown, and none of them have signs. As soon as you put up a sign saying swim at your own risk, it implied that you knew there was a danger. And with that implication is
right.
maybe there is something you should
right.
have done
right.
to build a better diving board instead of having Davey Turley doing on his volunteer time, and maybe now Davey's responsible.
Yeah.
It's better to, you know, to say nothing about liability, maybe some signage as part of our security that still says, you know, members only or something, so that, hey, you're either a member and you understand the liability, or you're a guest of a member, you're a guest of a member, or you're unwelcome. And if
that's
you're trespassing, then you know.
Like every year when we send out for assessments, there should be something in there about the ranch and about the what you're doing on the ranch. If you're bringing ATVs or horses, that you know what. So every member at least has
right,
that.
And to differentiate, because we've had most of our trouble with non-members. Look, if you're a member, most of them know you're educated. We direct you once a year in the annual thing to the website to work with any activities on the website. You know, so again, it's generic. But if we were in trouble, we can show. Currently, we do have information on the website to contact. If you chose not to, that was your deal. But as far as putting up more signage and signing waivers, the more specific you be, the more it implies that there is liability
yeah,
there, the more likely they are.
I'm glad Ben mentioned that, because that was one of the things the attorney said, too, is that there was risk with us going down all of those roads.
It's just never ending. If every restaurant at the front said, hey, don't back into the light pole in the parking lot because it'll dent your bumper and stuff, you know, the more you warn them of it, and then trying to not have it, if it does happen, then they're like, well, you knew. This must have been a problem. Other people must have been backing in that lamp pole. So I'm suing you because you didn't move it.
I couldn't agree more, and I completely agree with Dirk, and that is I don't want to be driving around and have a sign every 50 feet saying, travel at your own risk, do this at your own risk, yeah. Do this at your own risk. For a couple reasons. One is that, like you said, an attorney's going to go, well, you had them every 50 feet, but you should have had them every 25.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
happy to have guards.
And quite honestly, if we just, you know, we just say, hey, you know,
we're doing it at your own risk. We can have a policy statement that's real generic.
Yeah.
All activities on the ranch are at your own risk.
No, this ranch is for members only, anyone else,
members and members, guests or whatever.
Yeah, guests are responsible for the activities of their member, whatever. But it's something that we do as part of marking the boundary of the ranch and our security and kind of knowing who's in there. And once you pass this point, we can take a photograph of, hey, there was a sign when you left the county road.
That just indicates the C1 and that's dead end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do not go through
that. Wonderful.
Dead end. All right. The limited liability company stuff is just ready. $100 to $300 LegalZoom. There's just a bunch that'll help us with it. Relatively inexpensive. The only thing is that we really don't, at current, I don't see that we have anything to protect. Like, you know, I mean, we could do the pond, and that's probably the first one we should do, you know, like we're saying, for drowning, for whatever. And the board will be also the board of the limited liability company, the director of the... it'll have to be resubmitted every year when the board changes because, you know, the members will change. But, I mean, that's it. Fence and gate on Quarter Horse Road is Linda's. Do you have an update on that? Says you do.
That fence. Yeah. The fence said the old Findlay fence, the one that's been alongside that road forever, is that on the property line?
I think I saw his thing that said that the road was, you know, was wandering in on his property. I don't think it's exactly on, but it's within 10 feet. But there is a ravine up there, and it's been years, but I remember about the property now he's bought. That the erosion was starting to cut over in the road, so people had started driving around it. And it is something that we should maybe spend a little time with the grader, push some dirt in it, make it a little better passable, and so that we're not encroaching further on his property. But again, there is an easement there, and that was historically the ranch road long before he bought it, and it, you know, needs to stay there. But I think, you know, you did send the letter, and he agreed to remove the gate.
Yeah, if we would fix the road so it doesn't go in on his property. The way the road is right now, there's about this much space, like what the table width space, between the road and the fence. If you go up towards his property, right where Dirk is, there's a tree.
Right.
And so the road goes that much width over again onto his property and around that tree and up on...
Well, the real question is not whether it's on his property or not. It's where just whether it's... whether it's beyond the easement on his property
exactly.
Or not.
And
to some degree, even historic.
But, my lots at Deer Springs have ranch roads that go out through the middle of my lots. It's not in the 25 foot along the boundary or anything, but that's historically where they were.
Right.
And any new roads really should be contained to that 25 foot unless the lot owner agrees to it. But there's historically been a road through it along the east.
That's
right, his lot, all the way through his access to the next lot. In the spring, we need to take the grader up, do a little work to reestablish the road where it was, and if that's put a little more dirt into the erosion and stuff. But if that's more than 25 foot from the border, it doesn't matter. That's historically where it was.
Okay. And we need to cut down the tree.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That baby will be gone. Trust me.
And the only other thing, and I asked...
The road always went around the tree.
It did.
So why do we need to
cut
down?
We don't want to move the road.
We want to leave the road where it's always
been. The way the road has gone around that tree, and because of the nettles and Jerry and that going up there, you just go on up, and you know the dirt gets pushed over against that. That's the way the road goes.
Yeah, so but we can build the road on path, so it's obvious that there's a road going past his lot to
around
access.
The tree?
Yeah, around the tree. But I don't know. We want to remove a tree to try to move a road and create more work. There was historically a road there, and wherever it went, we want to go in and run the grader, you know, run the grader along.
I asked Paul if he knew of another area on the lot where perhaps when Jerry was there, people drove up into the lot to get up onto that lot, and neither of us know of anything like that. And so the only thing I can think of he's speaking of is that tree.
Yeah, I'm happy, you know, Brent. You know, over roads and stuff this spring when we can get up there going.
Well, why don't we send him a letter? Because I think he wants a response, right? And he wrote a letter that says, I will move the gate if the ranch will agree to reestablish the road where it was or something.
Right, and I would.
And so I think we can say, as soon as weather permits, we will reestablish the road where it historically was.
I think I sent a letter back and told him that and asked him, I said, in the meantime, we need to have a key to your gate. The ranch managers need to have a key to your gate.
He gave one, didn't he?
No. But I have keys to everybody's gate.
It's not going to be an issue. I mean, it's deep enough snow, nobody's going to be there. By the time it's dry enough to go do it, we'll go, and if the gate's still there, we'll cut the gate off, run the road.
I'd like to take that tree out.
We'll see it.
You guys put one in your chair.
To plow that, to plow that around that tree. It's always a hard job.
The ravine that is there is extremely deep.
It is a rugged.
You cannot.
So I'm going to make something to cut that tree and drop it in the wash at the right place and help slow the erosion.
You can't hike down in and back out again, or else I would have done that a long time ago.
We need to.
Okay, well, we'll look at it when it's dry enough, and maybe we'll remove the tree. So I guess we've responded back, and we're just fine.
I think
so,
I have, because I asked him.
So we'll move forward with that in the spring. I'll just leave this as a reminder for us so we don't ever forget about it until we get it done.
Well, the important thing is, this is important, that we've addressed it. We've, you know, called him on it, addressed it in writing, because in the past, that's been, you know, there's only one gate a year shows up, but 5 years later now there's five more lock gates, and the first one is now 5 years old, and people really think, well, now you can't make me take it down. We've got to maintain the road, the ranch roads and easements.
And if push comes to shove, I'll take the dozer down there and recut the road, and then Paul can go behind with the grader and, you know, crown it. And you know, I mean, it's a couple hours of work. Last time I was up in there, I was up there with John Davis from the network. So, doing it on the ATVs.
But sounds like a good project.
Now, are we going to be responsible for putting a not through road sign up? I mean, that's a simple thing.
Well, we already talked about ordering and doing some that said non-through road or dead end or something on those couple of driveways, because they come right off the...
Can we have to order them, or can we make them up with a router, you know, just...
We were talking about getting stuff that,
well, who made the signs that were already there?
Ken Lent.
Ken Lent had them made by the guy who was the sign maker at the VA.
Made by the same guy.
That's something I talked to Ben about going looking online.
He was looking online. But to get something that is you know, Ken keeps the same thing.
Right. I want to keep. They're just done with the router or something.
Well, call Ken Lent.
We need a number to say dead end or no through street or something.
Like
that
would help
off the county road and off the Nettle Canyon, just to try to keep people.
I think it's good.
Same thing.
That's it.
That's
all
I got.
Paul and Nancy.
Well,
what's up, Nancy?
I thought you had something on the donkey deal.
It was,
just for the notes and those, the recording.
Not the letter, but it's gone.
It's gone. It was settled for $4,500.
Okay,
I didn't hear that.
It was settled for $4,500, and that was just it was a cheaper way out. No liability, no fault.
It was just to pay the Chinese, I'm sure.
It was cheaper, right. Also, that's right, reading through the papers, a previous board had given some money to the lawyer. I don't know that there's any left. I think the initial amount was $750. And there was a few calls
Larry made a few calls and stuff, so they debited a few, but I'm going to check on that to see if there's any money in that account left. We may be able to get a couple hundred bucks back. Okay. Sorry.
Great.
So it's done.
Done deal.
No more
deal.
No more.
Done.
Good deal. Tired of hearing about it. The beds have been ordered. Thanks. Frames. The question is anybody going up north?
If we'd known Dirk was up that way, we'd have... Of course, I don't know, you drive a Ford. I don't know if it made it up there to Salt Lake and back.
I drove a Honda Chevy.
Oh, okay. Well, you could have strapped them babies to the roof.
Storms on the way up and storms on the way down.
I think we got somewhere around 10 beds with box springs.
You need a truck to haul them back?
Well, I need a truck. Well, I have a truck.
Trailer.
We have a trailer, but the problem is...
The beds are up north somewhere?
Yeah.
I thought they were here.
No, they're right.
They won't deliver them to you?
They would have. We said we'd go get them.
Do you have an enclosed trailer? Does anybody here have an enclosed trailer?
I can get one. I can get a 14-footer.
Okay. Question is that ranch truck just eats gas like it's nothing. My thought was rent a U-Haul for a day.
Well, I can tell you this, in the next month I'll be going to Salt Lake and could probably...
I think that's what... Yeah. We've got two or three people that are
right.
going to be going up there anyway with an enclosed trailer. You know, we don't need them until April.
Right.
That if somebody goes that we're, you know, the ranch will pay their gas, so
if
that
their spring
will
pay my fuel, I would drive my... And I think my Ford truck would make it.
You know, I think that's fair with Dirk Red or something.
Right.
Stuff
well, that's my question out to you guys.
And
we're going up on the 23rd.
Slide in an enclosed trailer or something that you got to have a, for that many beds, you got to have a,
something like a
trailer. Box trailer or something so they
have
either mattresses.
Mattresses and box springs.
And where are they at? I mean, what city?
It's up somewhere around Salt Lake.
In somebody's house or
no,
business?
Set of business. It's actually the Hunts.
So you kind of need to get there
business.
During business hours. Shep Hunt's family. Oh.
That was one of the reasons why we went with them. Kind of keep them going. But my other question...
The other reason was it's a good price.
Really good price. Other question is, when we get them back here, is there a place in town that I can store them until April or so?
Another good reason
that we have.
Yeah.
I'd just assume he stored right where they're at.
Right. And he has no problem storing them.
Well, let's
pick them up till April.
That's what we're worried about. Now, we'll be making spring trips March, April, late March, and early April. If we have them in by May, we're good.
Right.
Yeah. We also have beds that we bought here, queen size beds. These are different sizes.
Yeah.
Fencing plans, we've already talked about. I've been borrowing a snowmobile from Larry Meltzer. He's not on the ranch during the winter, and he purchased this snowmobile, which I think the ranch should purchase if he's offering to sell it, just to be honest, my opinion. Making trips to the water tank, making trips out to the generator field, running around the ranch if I have to do anything. But
is it an adequate machine?
It is. It is.
Top speed 85. It's a 92 Polaris 5500 with electronic fuel injection.
I don't know. I think he bought it for 1500 or 1300.
Tall track.
No.
It's a good. It's not a powder machine. It's overall a good machine. And it'll get you around if the conditions are right.
Did you want to sell it?
Well, I've talked to him about it, and he hasn't ridden it since he purchased it 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But he didn't.
Can we change the tracks to a powder track?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it seems to me, having been stuck a few times in snowmobiles,
you don't have to tell us.
You're pro, huh?
We know about the go 5 feet and dig out.
Yeah.
Go 5 feet and dig out routine. So, anyways, I got the snowmobile that I'm borrowing from Larry Meltzer, and I'm planning on maybe riding the fence line and see what I can see and kind of get somewhat of an assessment.
5 feet at a time.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, now that the snow is melted and crusted and stuff, it's really not a problem. And running, you know, flat ground up the well field and stuff on a track that you're hitting every day.
Yeah.
That's not a problem.
Yeah, once you get a track,
unless you're out, you know, for fun and recreation and powder and stuff. that's when you need the tall track.
That fresh 3 feet of powder is the real tough snow.
Once you get a track built, once you get something packed down, then you're fine.
Right.
So, it only takes one good one, too.
So anyways, I have plans on checking all that. And then I had some questions about the fence north of the meadow. There's a fence already there. There's a spot or two that needs to be fixed. There was talk where we were just going to replace the whole fence. What's your guys'...
North of the meadow...
Talking about the forest?
Yeah. The forest fence?
Well, yeah. That gate to go up to Dale's.
Yeah.
There's that fence right there where the cows keep going through. When I went and fixed that fence, all the posts were laying down. None of the wire was up there. I had wired everything, but there's still a couple spots that the cows were still getting through.
Okay, so you've got the old pole fence that is in line with the Deer Spring Gate right on the north boundary going east and west.
Yeah.
And then there's one that comes up there by Bear Spring, right by the Deer Springs Gate that goes north and south. Mm,
right at Red Reservoir, at the end of Red
Top end of Red Reservoir. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the west fence.
Yeah, the pole fence there, and then going up the hill, you have peepos and wire.
Right, and that...
It's all fixed, but my suggestion is to not peg it all out.
No, yeah, that does.
To just fix it.
Right.
Even if you start putting some extra posts in... And
right.
Yeah, I don't know if... I don't think there's been any talk of taking it out.
Well, just replacing it. A lot of those posts were bent down, and that whole side over there where the goats used to be, there was no wire. It was all cut and just gone.
It needs to be rebuilt. And those areas where the posts you leaned up, some of them still need to be leaned up further, or maybe leaned up, maybe in some areas another post put in between them to strengthen it, because they were all laid over from either snow drift, pushing them over.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird how
they were all a whole fence up there.
Well, I know in a lot of the ones up north, they'll lay down fences, so that
because of the snow.
Yeah, and there's a technique that is pretty slick for those, but, they're harder to make, and you got to hook them up every spring and let them down every fall.
Lay them down.
The snow moves.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than you think.
Yeah, it does.
You just put like a post in or a pipe in the ground?
Yeah.
And then
you go over to Colorado, a lot of them are...
The fence posts are all still put in.
Right.
But then the wires, instead of... they kind of hook up to fence stays rather than the posts. So you just lift it like an inch off of the hook and
you've got wooden posts, like cedar posts in the ground that always stay there, and then the fence, in between the posts, they usually have a wooden stay,
right.
But these have one in between the posts and right next to the post, so when you look it up, then you just put a wire or there's a loop that loops over, and you go along and stand them up and stretch it. And
you have to look at that.
They do that all the time in northern Utah. Yeah. First time I ever saw it was in Minnesota, and that's for snowmobiling.
Mm-hmm.
If they can lay them down.
If there's against snowmobile, we almost have to do it there.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to snowmobile out.
Yeah, a lot of that exact setting, where that's on the north side, on the hillside, and that hillside gets snow, and all that snow needs to shift 3 feet, and it's smashed everywhere.
Right.
That's why in southern Colorado, all those, and it's not snowmobiling. I mean, it's just the hillside with deep snow, it'll ruin the fence and stretch the wire and let it down every year, and so they use those.
So that's my plans for spring and here in the next few weeks, try and get out and do something. But there's been a lot of snow out there. I have... tool shed is basically gone through and organized again.
You have a lot of rust on the shed. I
did.
You did?
The awning on the tool shed just collapsed.
Yeah.
Just the other day, Sunday. But,
the porch is blown out.
Yeah. So, basically, I have a couple little projects around the ranch house. When I installed those windows, everything on the outside, I painted everything on the outside, but on the inside, the window trim I haven't done. So I just dug up all of the old the wood that I bought for that. And then I have a friend who's going to show me how to build the closet organizer, which I'm kind of excited. It's actually my wife's Valentine's Day present.
She will be true.
Very nice. So get her clothes out of the bins.
Good for her.
So, but anyways, It says here water line plans and maintenance for cabins.
Soon as we can get to them.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. What did we budget for cabin maintenance this year?
Right on that budget, you have the thing that was either $9,000 or $10,000.
Is that much?
Yeah, no. I decided that more because of external doors and the jack on whichever one.
Cabin two.
That's right.
Where's David? Cabin maintenance, $9,000.
No, David.
Okay. Well, what do we have for headquarters?
In headquarters, we have headquarters area $1,500. Seems like we had another amount. But that was one that maybe we had to scale back.
Something to consider, the roof on the ranch house is really bad. Hasn't started leaking yet, but...
Isn't that metal?
No. Shingles are falling off.
Six layers of shingles.
Shingles are blown back.
Oh, yeah.
With all the weight of the snow, it's kind of like bowed. It's just a little bit. But it's, you know, finally popped back out now. But now that it's starting to dry, but... Just something to consider in the future.
Yeah, I'm going
to
note that because if it's got the weight of six layers of shingles and then snow like that, we should go to that metal insulation.
I'm saying you better put that on there.
Well, and, you know, to be honest with you, you know, because that addition that's on the back, so that's fairly freshly shingled, you know. So the only part we really have to take care of is that.
Oh, right.
That front part.
And it probably needs to be.
Well, but you could still strip the front, put down felt, and put metal on it.
Absolutely.
It's fresh and still good and waterproof. Put metal over it.
Exactly.
And you can put a layer or two of the shingles in.
My suggestion is to take all the shingles off, put the felt down, then put Armax insulation, and then put the...
Put some rigid insulation and put metal on it.
I think I estimated about $35,000 to $4,000 to do the whole thing. And that's without going through Dave for material.
Can you on the roof? Turn spongy?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing is easy.
Sheeting will probably have to be
replaced. It's normal construction for 80-100-year-old, yeah. You know.
I'm not sure I've ever taken the sheeting off.
I just want to throw that out there. I know we have a lot budgeted for cabins, and we have a little bit
sheeting on top
for headquarters area.
Now, what you'll do a lot of times, if there's a bad spot that's totally rotted, replace that board. But it may not be sheeting; it may be one by board.
It's typical 80-100-year-old.
You go into that one by, then put the inch and a half rigid insulation, and then put sheeting on it, and you screw through the sheeting and through the inch and a half, and then it adds that insulation.
Yeah.
On the outside, you've got a good firm.
And you've actually added some structural integrity because everything is screwed together.
Right.
Going through a lot of the stuff at headquarters, where the old shopsmith used to be, that whole thing's starting to buckle at the ground. I'm going to go through. You told me to take pictures of all the structures. Kind of buried in snow, so I just didn't. But I want to show you guys, if you're not out there to see it personally, but the roofs on a lot of these sheds and carports really taking a beating.
Well, we saw the bathroom, the comfort facility. Remember, it was the piece of glass just blowing in the wind.
Right. Just something that I'm doing in the wintertime to take inventory of the stuff that we're
doing. Right, the metal roofs, though, shedding the snow off. So it keeps the weight off it a lot better. Those cabins that have metal roof on it, it'll slide off, it'll pile up, but at least you're not going to get them collapsed.
We saw cabin four, and it's a ball.
Yeah, cabin four is really funny. It looks like an igloo. The other thing that I am concerned about is when the snow, you know, the snow slides off it, then you have all that water against that. You know, we got wood to soil contact up there.
Right.
And, you know, so it's kind of a catch-22 thing. One of these days when we have money, like we ever will, one of the days when we have money, it would not be a bad thing to jack those cabins up and actually get them away from the soil. And so when the snow slides off, it doesn't
you know.
It'll be interesting if we have three this year.
Metal roofs, there's a, I'm putting some on some of my metal roofs. There's a thing called a snow guard
that keeps the snow on it.
Piece of angle that goes out near the edge that just keeps the snow from sliding off.
Right, but that
still keeps the weight though.
Right, that's the deal. If you have a metal building like yours that can handle the weight, you want to keep it up there and it melts slowly and it goes in the rain gutters. These we want off, or we're going to collapse and they're just not built for quite the snow load.
Well, on the carport, on the east side of the carport, the snow came down and it just bent the edge of it.
Well,
it wasn't roofed. Wasn't roofed right, but. I'll send you guys pictures here in this next week.
Because your snow is actually a lot of stuff. Everything takes a night off.
Can you put ditches where the snow ends up and help a little bit?
Well, we could grade around the cabin so that, again, what's there is starts melting and stuff oozes and runs away from the cabin.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at cabin three is in such a bad area. I'd hate to see what it's going to look like this year with all the runoff.
Well, the other thing we could do, we could dig around those cabins and put in some drains, you know.
Let me tell you how the new building is working. We need to do the foundations instead because of the frost that we've got the problem with. All we really need to do is take some Bisqueen. We'll dig it out a ways around the base of the cabin, take that Bisqueen and run it around the bottom and out like this, so that when that water does it, it pushes out this way so your frost doesn't come back under. And we can have a shorter base on your home if you do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because your main problem is the frost. So if we can just run that bit clean down and then lay it out flat or at least 10 feet away from that house, you'll
have
a lot of that.
I'll
be very, no, put the dirt back on. Oh, more than that. We put about a good foot or two of dirt back on.
Well, but that's what needs to happen on cabin three.
You want
to
run
it solid, you know, I mean, it's dirt right against
the
plywood.
Mm-hmm.
Which may have been treated, but it's been there for over 25 years now. You know, to dig that down, peel off what's rotten, put new stuff, put this screen, and then put some French drain and some gravel.
But don't make an elbow. Just make it flow out.
Make a solid block retaining wall around the whole thing.
Well, my house is earth burned. There's 4 foot of earth in the back, and I did exactly what you're talking about in the back all along here. And I've never had not one drop of water come in.
Yeah.
From around my foundation, but I also put in some massive sumps and you know French drains, and I overbuilt it, which.
Well, you were prepared for the worst.
Yeah, which makes it very good this year.
Good.
Makes me look smart this year.
with some of this drainage stuff we're talking about, I think in the next couple months we're going to be seeing some serious runoff. And like Brent said earlier, luckily we have these retention ponds now, but I still think some of our roads are going to be hit pretty hard.
And that's why we need to jump on them and see what
that thing is. Do we have a stockpile of any crushed rock there at the pit?
No, but we have. There's a really big pile just down the road over there by the window.
We may need to start hauling. Even around the ranch yard and some of those areas, as it gets sloppy and soupy, and if we could dump out with the Kubota. And spread out a little bit of, it would be great if we had a pile of stockpiles right there.
I think we have a little bit.
We have a little bit that's down there. What would be nice, though, is, we keep talking about it every year, just that things pile up on you during the season. It would be really nice to go down there and reshape that yard and get the drainage that comes down between the cabins that runs right into the headquarters area and get that permanently... You know, diverted.
Well, you notice now there's not a whole lot more. There's not a lot of water coming in towards my door.
Right.
That last load that he brought, I kind of graded it to where it'll just run through the driveway instead of.
Well, what I want to fix is I want to fix that stuff that comes right through the corrals too.
Oh, and through the carport.
And through the carport.
Yeah, there's about this much ice in the carport. I don't think I could take a motorcycle out if I wanted to. So I just wanted to, just an FYI to you guys, that the next couple of months are going to be some serious runoff. And
you need to be really careful of the runoff that goes into those upper ponds, too. There's a head gate there, isn't it, that makes the water go past the pond, which you got to put down fairly early. So it
there's actually a new pond up there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Next year's water line plans. I think I emailed you guys the plans that I have for the new valves, and I think we should jump on this bladder or something, kind of meet together and say, hey, you know what, we're either going to seal it or we're going to put a bladder or we're going to do something, but I think this is the time where we need to make a decision.
Yeah, I would like to voice, I would prefer to not see PVC valves wherever possible.
Okay.
And I agree. I think that we, you know, if we're going to do it, let's just do it right.
Going through all the parts and stuff in the tool shed, I found 3 or 4 ball valves, brass ball valves. Nice.
Yeah, nice brass ball valves. And I was looking at that going, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah, I think they're 15 or 20 bucks a piece.
Yeah.
But I think we should jump on that. And that's about it.
Great.
About all I have.
Good.
Okay, next item, I added I was going through some title reports recently, and I just observed that the title report that I got from the title company doesn't match what's on our website, and I think they ought to match. And basically what happened, there was a revision made in 2003 when Larry Zarr was the president. And there were maybe only one thing that's changed that I know of, but maybe a couple of things. But the only one I can remember right off was that you're allowed to have 2 cabins on your lot. And in any case, the current deed restrictions say 1. So that was the thing that I noticed was different. So. But just because it was voted on at an annual meeting and everybody agreed to it, then, you know, the president and secretary at the time should have signed a revised, amended deed restriction and recorded it with the county recorder. So that step didn't happen. So I would like to get a motion made to prepare that document to make it consistent with what's on the website and what was voted in the 2003.
I make a motion you do that.
What's that?
We have the correct ones on the website, and that's what we're giving out to people. But
the association website.
Right, but it's just never been recorded in the courthouse.
And what we want to do is
we're allowing you to.
I thought that's always been the...
But it's never been recorded, is what he's saying.
But I mean, I thought that even the county, that's what the county...
The zoning ordinance allows it. However, the deed restriction, if you pulled it...
The original deed restriction only allowed 1 cabin. The county allowed for a mother-in-law quarter or a second dwelling.
Right,
we revised ours to match the county.
Okay.
But we never recorded the courthouse, so it's never been legal.
So the document,
it may have been signed, but it didn't get recorded and has now been lost.
So as near as I can tell, the document was never created or signed or recorded. I've talked to Larry, talked to Barbara, Phil Hall. We thought Phil was the president then. Anyway, I think it's a fairly simple procedure, but we probably need a motion to make it consistent with what the vote taken was.
We have the motion.
Well, so I want to make the motion.
Shauna has made the motion.
I'll make the motion that you...
And the motion is?
That we prepare the documents and the recording that goes along with voting of the membership of Deer Springs Ranch, that we have 2 cabins per lot that was discussed at the annual meeting.
What I propose you amend is... Let's not say the verbiage here. Let's just make it consistent with the 2003 meeting.
Meetings. Okay. You mean we were hoping?
Who seconded?
Okay.
I think she put it.
Who seconded?
Well, she's still making.
Want me to reword it? She said, okay. So we want the motion to read that we will, Dirk will. That we authorize Dirk to make the corrections that is needed from the 2003 deed restrictions that says we are allowed to have 2.
There may be other things in the deed restrictions.
Oh.
You know, we just need to make, we just need to update the county courthouse.
Update county, okay, you help me say it. Update the county court records to show.
To reflect
let me
what I would prepare a motion to state. I think that we just need a motion to make our current deed restrictions consistent with the amendment voted on in the 2003 annual meeting.
You don't want anything by two okay.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Could you reiterate that again?
Okay, one more time. The motion is to make our recorded deed restrictions consistent with the vote of the 2003 annual meeting.
And the reason that came up is somebody had put three cabins on the lot.
Now that, yeah, there's been question, and that's where we, you know, before
I went back through the reason why I say I went back through the 2003 meeting, and there were three proposed amendments. I can't even remember what the three were. But as I recall, one or two of them passed and one or two of them failed. I know for sure, because the thing that caught my eye was the two cabins. I believe that's probably the only issue, but in case it's not, I would like the motion to have been somewhat generically stated. Again, what's on our website is correct. It's just not correct.
You can prepare a document, sign it, and then record it.
It can be recorded.
So do you think that you can do that by you signing it?
I don't know. I've got to now go through, get some legal counsel to see, does Larry Bear and the secretary of that time need to sign the amendment? Or since they're currently not the president, Do I and Dave Turley need to sign the amendment, or do all four of us need to sign? It's kind of a can of worms. And again, that's why I prefer a somewhat generic motion, because I don't know exactly how to make that correction. But
I understand. Okay.
But anyway, I think it needs to be done. It should have been done then, and it wasn't done. Okay, second issue in regards to this. King County is currently revising all of their zoning ordinances again. And they did this once before, maybe about 5 years ago, where they basically said, we're abandoning all the zones that there are. And we're replacing them with all these new zones that all have their new criteria. And basically, you know, that was an effort made by the planning and zoning to say everything's in such a state of a mess, we just want to make a whole new rule book. And so they had a variety of public hearings and so forth. Like, I think previous to them, Deer Springs was zoned agriculture, and then they changed it over to what they called forest recreation. And so I spent some time in the county, again, just kind of trying to do some research so I represented the sale of a property correctly. What is our zone now? Going through, they said, well, yeah, it's Forest Recreation 9. And I said, I was pretty sure it was Forest Recreation 18 or 20 or whatever it was. But they said, no, I think it's 9. But they really had inadequate ability to answer that question, but they said, but it kind of doesn't matter because we're going to this whole new thing in 3 months anyway, so let's tell you about that. And and so going through the new thing, we would be in what's called Rec R9 is our new title for what they have proposed for Deer Springs. And again, why new names? Are the old names bad? It's really because they're coming up with a whole new plan. And so everything has to have new names so it's not confused with the old plan. but I think I have some personal concern that that whole process gets inadequate public attention, gets inadequate public awareness,
input,
and they're able to basically change all kinds of things in this big swoop.
And they're going to have an uproar of people.
And I doubt if they'll have an uproar of people because
they're going to know.
Nobody knows about
nobody
it.
Nobody knows about
well,
it.
Well, as they find out about it, that's what
yeah, happens. One at a time they'll have mm-hmm. deals to issue with, and it'll be too late to deal with anything. So I did go through and I got copies of what they've drafted now, and there were three or four items that I think we need to address. One was they've taken out the second cabin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, item in it. And you have they left it in, but you have to have a minimum of 36 acres in order to qualify. And so, and I'm like, what's the logic behind this? Well, we just felt like on these smaller parcels under 36 acres, the two cabins really crowded things too much. And we're like,
who's making it up?
Was there a public request for this? Well, that was just kind of our thinking. And I'm personally super frustrated that we have a body of politics basically that continues to take away things from us with no reason other than their own
agenda.
Judgment, and that they would like to basically restrict things and cause all growth to be in cities and not out in outlying areas. And so it frustrated me. Another thing is that they had disallowed use of gravel pit on in those lots. So, and we have currently at least two lots that have gravel pits on them. And so, anyway, I would like to suggest that we write a letter that maybe one or two of us, like Brent and I, go through it in a pretty good amount of detail and say, this was something that we used to have and we still want it. This is something that we used to have and we still want it. The only two that I can remember right off was the second cabin and the gravel pit that I thought, man, those are two things we want. And but they said, I talked to the county commissioner over planning and zoning, Mr. Hewlett, and his comment to me, I said, look, you know, I don't like this, I don't agree with this, I don't think our membership's going to agree with it, we haven't been consulted, I think this is kind of going to go through with a small three-line notice in the paper that says amendment to county zoning ordinance and with no description of the 100 things that you guys are changing, and nobody will show up to the meeting, and then later you'll say, well, you guys were all noticed and nobody showed up, so we went ahead without you. And I said, I feel it's all inappropriate. And he told me that, and he said, well, sure, now we're down to just getting ready to put this in. Why didn't you guys come to the meetings we've been having? You know, and so, I mean, he was critical that we hadn't even come to meetings that hadn't even had a public notice. And but that's kind of the frustration that I have on this. So
are we supposed to have a representative at every single one of the planning and zoning
meetings? Well, it's human nature on their part. When they get in these meetings and they get involved and they donate their, you know, they're putting in their time, they're not donating their time, but, you know, kind of like, you know, we go on about
and somebody are donating their time.
True, but the commissioner's not. But, you know, then they have a lot of ownership, but they've gone way down a path before anybody knows about it.
You wouldn't have known about it unless you were in there doing some other work.
I found out about this, you know, just totally in happenstance, in a very roundabout way. But the general county planning and zoning group right now, they feel like, I mean, their mindset is, hey, we've got lots of loose ends and we want to tie them all up. And that mentality by itself doesn't bother me, but every time there's a loose end, they're tying it to be more restrictive. Every time there's any inconsistency, they're 100% of the time leaning towards taking our freedoms away. And that's really bothersome to me. So, but in any case, I think if we will write a letter from, if the board would authorize, say, Brent and I to get together and form a letter from our association saying that we, you know, respectfully request that these, if you're going to change the name of our zoning, that you don't change the uses of our zoning, and want to remind you that it's a taking if you do so. Gary Smith, who's the county land ordinance administrator, was really helpful to me on this, and he proposed to the body that any rights that somebody has under the current zoning, that if they were not in the new zoning, that they would be grandfathered in as an allowable use, and has some good legal basis for that, because it would be a taking of a right. And they denied his request.
What?
And voted it down and said, if it's fully vested use, we would agree. So, for example, if you had a Deer Springs lot now that had two cabins on it and they were physically built, that would be considered a vested use, and therefore you would be grandfathered that when they switch over the zoning. But if you had a Deer Springs lot now that allowed two cabins, but you didn't have them physically constructed, and they switch over the use, and you're now only allowed one, that's not a vested use, and you wouldn't have that. And so I really think it's, I can't say enough dissatisfying comments about the whole direction, really, but I think all we can do right now is just try to protect the allowable uses that we have, and send them a letter and ask to be noticed if they make changes, and probably we're going to have to show up at some of the meetings and express our disapproval to them removing privileges that we currently have.
Well, see, I have a tremendous amount of problem. I have a tremendous problem with this for a couple of reasons. One is that I see the building inspector a couple times a year. I see the assessor once a year out there, when they're out there. I never see planning and zoning, members of planning and zoning out there. If they come out, I haven't been there when I've been there, or they haven't introduced themselves, or, you know, and I pay attention when I see a legal or official car or something. And what bothers me is when somebody says, well, two cabins per lot would be extremely restrictive. Most of the part of my lot that's flat, it's completely treed. I could stick another cabin. Not that I'm going to, but I could stick another cabin on my lot and never see it.
Well, and you know, I think there were some additional restrictions for outbuildings, too. There was another thing now that I'm thinking about it. So if you had an equipment shed or some things like that, that it had to be built of similar workmanship as your house and stuff, and which I think is inappropriate for business.
Who comes up with this stuff?
I want to look like a motion to get this done, and I'll go over some stuff with you.
Okay, well, so, anyway, I would like to suggest that a motion be made to allow us to pursue drafting and sending a letter to the county planning and the county land use authority.
That's what they're called now.
Requesting that we maintain our existing rights and detailing that to them.
Are you writing that down, Linda?
I'm writing fast, but I do not take shorthand.
I'm making that motion.
Motion to allow us to pursue.
To allow Dirk and Brent to draft a letter to the county.
And send it.
And send it to, the way you want to say it.
County Land Use Authority.
And it's to the Land Use Authority. That's who they want it to.
Right. They're not the planning and zoning any longer.
To request that we maintain our allowable uses that we currently have, and detailing those to them.
We got a headache.
I didn't mean to give it to you.
I'll draft. I'll draft you a letter. I know that you'll take care of some of the little nuances that I have in there.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll second that.
Ed seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any who oppose?
I need to backtrack a little bit. I'd like to make a motion. I looked at what Jody Akers had written. We probably should have a motion. So I make a motion that she recommends in here that Dirk, you as president, sign these address changes, and I as water committee chairman sign them, both of us sign them. So I make a motion that Dirk sign as president, and I sign as water committee chairman.
That's to correct the addresses.
To correct the addresses on the state, because it is an official document that we are signing to get those, to change the addresses on most of them. There's eight of them that are in the name of Deer Springs Ranch, not Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association, and possibly file whatever to get that changed or clarified. It may, she thinks it's a bigger deal than I do. I don't know, but if we need to, we need to, just to get them updated. So that's my motion.
Okay.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any who oppose? Okay. Other item is necessary.
I have two things, and they're not, it's not a big deal. I noticed that we also took the, I don't remember the discussion about taking the $75 non-member reservation fee and reducing it. It's not a big deal to me.
We had that motion before we spent the hour on the other.
Oh, okay. I just was out in left field. No, it's no big deal. I don't think the amount of money it means is any big deal to me.
No, it's impractical, and we haven't been enforcing or collecting it.
Right.
Much, so.
And then the second, I've had several people ask me about the, and part of it is related to the documentation on the water rights, because we've noticed that there are some inconsistencies. And part of this other part is, and this is a really good time to bring this up about this, the fact that we voted on something, we didn't legally record it with the county when we did, as we should have. Anyway, part of the thing is about the record storage, and I know that Dale has most of the records at his house. I have no problem with him having those records at his house. However, as a fire service professional, what I would do whenever I inspected places, I always recommended that they have two sets of records. One at wherever the main storage facility is, and one off-site. And we can either have Dale's be the off-site place where he keeps records, and we have a separate, you know, we put a metal shed out there consistent with the ranch house, and
six layers of shingles.
Yeah, six layers of shingles. But we really seriously need to consider. I'm concerned about having all of our records in one spot and having a catastrophic problem.
Well, I want to add something here to this if I can. Dale's records, although Dale has a bunch of records, he has a bunch of records because he's made copies of things and so forth. And he probably has maybe the official records up till 90.
Well, he was president. Yeah, when he resigned as president, he kept the president's records like a lot. Right.
And ever since then, there is no official records. So Larry Bear has records. Barbara Button has records. Linda Alderman has records. Bill Clayton has records. And so.
And that's where
there were a bunch of records up at the ranch that all we had that are now gone. And so I think the main thing isn't to say we need copies of Dale's records, because we need to say where are we going to put our official records. And then Dale is welcome, and anybody else is welcome, to have copies of those records and encouraged to, so that we would have backup. But we've got, you know, Barbara's records are in boxes that she gave Linda. Linda has given to Ben. Ben's storing underneath the old ERA.
I have a record place in the building. Anything's welcome there. The only thing I have is a couple of boxes of Barbara's records that
turned. But there's some frustration, because I cannot answer right now as president. If I have a document right now that's important, like, say, a grazing permit, where do I file it? You know,
It's in my file cabinet.
First thing should be electronically. We should have an electronic copy of it.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. And today, I think one thing is everybody has their own notes. They all have copies of minutes. I think that we got to identify the association is willing to pay for and is obligated to store meeting minutes, annual meeting minutes, official documents, you know, because even bills paid and grazing leases, a lot of, you know, they're active for a year. They should be kept for a few years. But
12 years. We've got some that are 12 years.
But now, electronically, to do an off-site, scan them, and, you know, and take low ionization.
I would say this. There are certain records that land well, that we've done well, from Vance Green's efforts, for example, meeting minutes, meeting agendas. That's how we discovered this error, for example. There's a lot of good reason to have things stored there, but credit card receipts and invoices and all of those kind of things that are kind of saved as a big file for tax records, let's say employee records, they aren't public records, you know, that would want available on a website necessarily.
Right, and that's right. We only identify those meeting minutes that are public record, and that's the only thing we need. The other stuff, Linda has, at the end of the year, they need to be in a box, and whether Linda keeps them or they want them to stay in the basement for 5 years, and we torch them. I mean, they should be destroyed.
Well,
before...
I only use Dale as an example. I mean, we've got, I know that we have records all over the countryside with different people. And all I'm suggesting is that wherever these records are, we want to have them either have a copy of them, and we have two separate locations in which we store these.
Well, let's break it down into first thing. First question is, if I've got a document right today, if I've got this nice map and an accompanying BLM permit, where does this get stored? We need to have some discussion and decide.
Linda's firebox.
I totally disagree.
I haven't
seen it. I'm going to go into Linda's house and get this when I need
it. I think
this.
It needs to be in a DSR OIF.
Linda may not be the employee next year, and it should not be in Linda's house.
Right. And if you can put it in his basement, or in the basement of a building, or it's access to a public facility.
I am not going to go get the key from Ben and go wander down into his basement and dig through boxes to find this.
So what do you
then? I need it in.
I have a suggestion.
I don't have a good answer. I mean, I'm not trying to propose an answer. I'm going to tell you all the things that
I'm not going to do.
Can I make a suggestion?
And nor do I think any future president will do.
Should we do it? Should we have a one at the ranch?
Well, that's my suggestion. Is possibly purchasing a cargo container, not like the one that's at the ranch right now where snow and water and rats and everything can get in, an airtight one, purchase a few file cabinets and have everything checked in copies or current things on file.
Rat proof is not exactly the answer.
Come to a meeting. If you want something filed at the ranch, you just give me a box and say, hey, this has already been scanned, it's already been documented. Could you put it in the file under this, or that?
Well, let me ask you this. Here's what I would do. Just kind of being real, thinking as a president, what would the past president do? What would anybody do? I like an online archive that's password protected, let's say, here are the water right documents, the scannable documents. It may not be the tax return receipts, but I do think that we should create a password protected, scannable, document repository that has some good backup protection to it too, so that if that website crashed, whoever's hosting it is got some redundancy in it. Do you like that idea, Brent?
I like that idea a lot, and I like it for a couple of reasons. One is
we're going to have board members that live different places, and I can say, hey, here's where you find that document. You don't have to drive physically and get in some container shed.
And they actually, I'm not recommending it by any means, but they actually have websites like that where you scan it in, you store it there, you access it there, and then they have a separate storage facility where they have it electronically filed. We could do the same thing here, pretty much ourselves, but anyway, my point of bringing this up at all is simply because I don't, whether it's a Dale's house and he has certain records and he has a problem, or if we have a problem with the records that Ben has stored, we have a copy. And I totally agree. I do not believe that we keep things forever and a day. If we're past the statute of limitations,
that's the problem. The two boxes I have with Barbara's, I'm just looking through for this last thing.
Basically,
80% of it is paid bills from 5 years ago. They're trash. Now, mixed in with it could be signed TCNRs or something
right.
That we need. That, somebody's got to take the time, and it falls really back to Linda's position at this point, as far as taking the time. It's going to take some time and money and stuff to organize it and separate. This is 2010 built, but after 2013 can be destroyed in a $1 banker box. It says right on the outside, destruction date or whatever, so that, hey, if you're a hoarder, they can stay in the basement or wherever they are until I need the space. But the legal documents that are legally binding, they need to be scanned electronically, multiple copies in a few different
places. That's basically what I've done. I have banker boxes. I can put 2 years in the banker box, and I've got one that's going to go into storage pretty soon. But the registration for the cars and sales receipts like that are important, those I keep in the file.
Filing cabinet.
And it goes ongoing. The insurance information that Ed got from me goes all the way back from when I started because of the mule thing. I kept all the insurance thing in my file cabinet rather than sticking it in the banker box. But I totally agree. It should not be at my place. Those documents, I thought about a safety deposit box, maybe those kinds of things.
Well, I like the idea of electronically filing them, and then that way the president
a title to a car, for example, to sell the car, that's it. But any of the deeds that are public record, throw them in the trash.
Well, and if we did a little better job on this
courthouse, and there's a system that's foolproof.
On this whole thing, if we'd have done a better job, we wouldn't be chasing down something that happened in 2003.
Exactly.
It'd be signed, sealed, recorded, and filed.
Well, why don't we maybe suggest some things? Let's look at an electronic repository. Does anybody want to head that up? Any volunteers?
I have a scanner. Do you want to have a nice HP scanner that I don't use anymore?
Well, and I have actually a scanner that's made for this, so it's a. You put 60 pages on it, hit the button, it not just scans them all, but gives you back a PDF file. That's the kind of scanner. They're about $600, and we may even need to invest in one. But it's real easy to create multi-page documents fast with that. We could even scan receipts and everything, actually.
It's
great.
I don't think we need to because it's all in the QuickBooks. That type of thing.
Well, if you're ever audited tax-wise,
you've got to have a hard copy of it.
Let me do some research
on this.
So, look into what's available there, and I'll add that as an agenda item next time so we can take some official action on the record.
And I'm using the big one, like Brent's talking about. I use Amazon S3, CS3. You pay, it's like 15 cents per gigabyte per month. Right now I store a ton of stuff on there, and it charges my credit card, and I'm paying about $3 a month right now for a lot of office files, all my QuickBooks, all my companies, everything. And they are automatically set up. They back up to Amazon's, it's one of these digital archives that's triple encrypted and backed up 600 different ways. But it backs up my computer every night at midnight. It's programmed. I was dealing with external hard drives, and then if the building burned down, but it could be programmed so that it backs up your entire laptop, from your house, and Dirk's files as president. He's the one that actively is president, so that things that are active, he can put in a DSRA file, and it automatically updates. The problem still is, if I've got 10,000 sheets of paper in a box and I need one, I'd rather spread them out in this room and find it than 10,000 sheets on a
Oh, yeah. No problem.
You have to organize some system that this is grazing related, this is roads related, this is CCNR, this is meeting minutes. Somebody's got to organize that, or it's a nightmare.
Let me make just a suggestion, and then we can consider if we want to do it. One of the things that we ought to do is put out a request to anybody who might have a set of records, you know, past presidents of the board, you know, secretaries, blah, 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 see if they have any records. Ask if we can get them all either shipped here, you know, however.
Copies.
So if we get this set up, then people could go scan them. It wouldn't take me very much. I mean, I have, ever since I've been on the board, I have my own records. I don't want to let go of them. I have every record when I was president. And I'll still keep my own records, and I won't whine about it like a bunch of past presidents have, or lose them like half the past presidents have. But it wouldn't take me long to scan them and email them or something so that, you know, the company still needs to build minutes and decisions, and especially at least the annual minutes.
I agree with you, Brent, after we know where we're going to put them. Well, I've already got boxes in my office and went and got Larry Bear's stuff, and after having them for a while, and I had Linda's stuff and Barbara's stuff.
I think we should have it match
back, because I'm like, okay, well, I read them all and I've got what I...
Anyway, what I was going to suggest is that we put them, if we've got them all here at a meeting sometime, and then each of us took a box. You know, so, and then we each took a box. We had an hour.
I'm tired to go, of thinking about it.
To go, I know, but at some point in time or another,
you've got to do it, though.
At some point in time or another, someone has to do it, right? Now, I'm a big believer.
But let me say this, Brent. My personal feeling is, let's make the system work for new records we're creating today first. And let's work the bugs out for 2 months so that the new records we're creating today
have a place.
That's working and working well. And then let's go get all the old records and force them
into both sides.
And I'm fine with that. I'm just saying at one point in time or another, as the board, we need to keep first of all, anything we do like from this point on, it's like the dealing with the county. Okay, we know what's going on with the county. We can't push that onto another board.
Right.
That's our responsibility. We take care of it. Okay.
Right.
What I say is, if we want to get the new stuff, we get it handled. At some point in time or another, we get all the old stuff in, and then we go through it. You know, we have a central garbage can that things that just go there that don't need to be. Anything, we have a questionable pile that you throw into a questionable pile that one of the other board members will review, and then we have a pile that just needs to be saved stuff, you know.
That sounds good.
But if we had all the board members there, we took an hour each to go, and we each had a box to go through, you know.
Yeah, like Linda said, 6 hours. I mean, it would be a big undertaking.
But maybe
we make
a work
in it this week.
Work.
It doesn't have to all be done at one time. But if we get it, if we work out a little bit at a time, within a year we can have it done.
Yeah.
And then we don't leave a problem for the next board.
I agree. Let's try to resolve this with our board, because this has been a problem for years. You know, like Larry Bear said, when he was the president, 2003, there was a book, and he copied it all. And so I borrowed it from him, and it, you know, is about so thick of all the history of meeting minutes and so forth. And he said, and there was a duplicate book, and I gave it to the next president. Now, nobody knows where that book is. Larry was president. I said, Larry, did you have it and lose it? And he claims, no, I never received it. So
2003?
Yeah, you saw Phil Hall and Candace Mosey between those two.
Right. So somewhere in there, we're not doing a good job, and we can't really make it dependent on a president. We've got to have something.
But that's got to be electronic.
More
and differentiate between corporate records, meeting minutes, and votes taken is totally separate from the day-to-day bills getting paid and that kind of crap.
We need to make sure, too, when we do it, when we scan it, we don't scan it as like a JIT file or something like that. It needs to be done with, like, optical character recognition, so the computer understands the words, and then we can go back and search.
Well, and if you have that in your program, yeah, and you scan them that way, yeah, you could
just
pull up anything
with
grazing.
A picture with a title, and that may not be enough to find what you're looking for. You know, file name.
Anyway, I mean, we don't, you know, let's just start working on it and getting ourselves heading in that direction.
I have a software that does that, and I have this one that'll do even closely related, I mean, it's going to do handwritten stuff.
And it does great, except, you know, for if you find like a logo, you know, business logo, it says, well, what's that? You know, because it works off of a known database of characters. Courier is great.
The only thing I will say about it is I've used it a lot of times. You know, when I was in the printing business, we'd have things that we didn't. Somebody came in and they'd like, I want to retype this 30-page document. Or I want to make these four edits to this 30-page document. So we would scan through and go through that process. So we, and it saved a lot of time over retyping it all. However, it's way slower than my PDF scanner. And almost every document comes back and says, okay, there's these 16 discrepancies. What do you want to do with them? And so I'm less optimistic that it's something that we can implement on a real-time basis, but I agree we should look into it.
For some of it, maybe.
And most of it could be dealt with a nice subdirectory, you know, meeting minutes, subdirectory 2003, subdirectory January, you know, and water rights, subdirectory Leaf Spring, subdirectory, you know, whatever. And so I think if we put some real good integrity into directory systems versus just, yeah, here's this pile of documents and Brent files them one way and Linda files them one way and Dirk files them another way, we're going to have chaos. But that's what we have now. We went through these boxes of records recently trying to find the amended deed restrictions. So, and just trying to just go through them and find that. I spent at least multiple hours. Linda, how much time did you spend?
I looked for probably a couple or 3 hours looking.
And then we had Dale go through. He spent, you know, hours. And so, you know, just trying to find one document. And now I'm fairly convinced that that document was never created.
And I just thought of something. While you were doing this, you could have been skinning.
It took me a lot longer to skin let's go down that path. I don't have a good answer, but we really need to tackle that.
But the hard copy storage, which is still a factor,
I don't think it should be at the ranch.
No, I don't either.
We have great managers now, but if you think back,
it can't be in the ranch. We can't the rats, the water. We've had documents up there that have disappeared, that are ruined. It can't be at the ranch. It's got to be in an archive location. Which mine's fine. Now they'll run out of space if they're like, I didn't really ever look at Barbara's.
Yeah,
I've got two boxes of Barbara's. It's less than half a box of stuff that should be there. But what she did is pulled the filing cabinet with the Pentaflex hanging file folders and everything out of the filing cabinet, hung it on the edge of the box. The box is collapsing because it's smashed all down. You know, it needed to be taken out, and all these put a rubber band. This is all 2003, and this is 2004 or something.
But files and big filing cabinets.
Anyway, I didn't mean to open a can of worms.
It's just
a
beef nest there.
It's a great undertaking, but it's so overwhelming. I have so many documents myself. And if you look in the business, I'm tired.
The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step.
And we've been discussing.
I agree. And I had this come up a couple of times before this meeting. Appreciate you bringing it up because we need to. But the very first question that I said is, man, I'm not going to spend a minute organizing the past when I can't even organize today. So let's get organizing today, get that problem solved, and then we'll go to the past.
Sounds good to me.
Is it possible to bring a bank box in at every meeting? And if there's, you know, like the meeting minutes, it'll all go into that month's meeting file and just kind
of
have a...
Linda is keeping and sheriff or the president. I mean, somebody, because all of us have copies of this. We don't want 47 copies of the day's agenda.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem. It's not that our meeting minutes are great now. You can go on for since...
They're online.
2000?
But things like if Ed brings in copies of something that he had and Brent brought in something that... And it's a copy. It just goes right into the...
But that's what creates so much, and you'll never find... The one thing you need, you just created the haystack to hide the needle you need.
Hmm.
You don't want the haystack. That's all this daily crap that all of you keep your own and throw it away. Don't give it to me, because then it'll screw up the system I have. I can find every document. I have the grazing lease from last year, because I was overgrazing last year. I signed it. I can vouch for it. 10 years from now, I can pull it and show you where it is. But don't dump all your stuff on me, and then I can't even find my own. That's the problem. Again, it's separating. That's still all daily stuff. A year from now, that'll be irrelevant because we'll be on to a new one. It's the long-term stuff that we are doing better with the monthly meeting minutes.
So how much of this stuff is like the ranch history for 50 or 100 years down the road? None of it or part of it?
Well, that's another question. There's audible tax records and stuff. Maybe there's just some nice historical stuff, and we're not collecting any of that really very well so that we could tell a story that would be of interest.
I have a history file.
You know. So
well, the best thing on that is like the archive of the newsletters that tell some stories, have some pictures. But, again, even in the last 20 years, there's been a lot of newsletters. We have some of them now on the website, but... There's a lot before that are lost, but those would be valuable then to try to...
And I know where they are.
Chronology and keep all the newsletters and all the annual meeting minutes. And
Dale has a really, really, really good system. I looked at it when I first started doing this to see what he was doing. And he has a really good system, and he has all that history there, and that's wonderful. I've accessed some of it for some of the things that I've done.
And I'm trying to get him to write a book on the history.
Yeah, there you go.
And he keeps saying that Patsy's organizing stuff, and I hope she is, because I think that a history book from Dale would be just fascinating.
On the rant.
One of the things, not a Deer Springs item, but Deer Springs sales and marketing, is that we're going to try to do some videos where we record Dale telling stories and stuff that, you know, would be available. So hopefully we can get some of that.
Can I make a motion to adjourn?
No. Okay, next item, executive session. I want to mention... we had one member, and maybe we've had others, feel like the executive sessions are something that the board may be using to come up with whole new directions and plans, kind of like we feel what the county is doing to us. But I would like to make it a matter of public record that we've never had an executive session without disclosing what the executive session is for. And so we aren't holding generic executive sessions like the one today is specifically to discuss membership dues and past fees, where it's not appropriate to name names in public records and stuff, but that's what we're going to discuss. So there shouldn't be any concern or alarm from the fact that we're having an executive session to discuss late fees, and I think every executive session that we've had, we have disclosed on the agenda what the executive session was for. So hopefully that would, you know, resolve some concerns or fears there. With that being said, I'd like to entertain a motion to move into executive session.
I make a motion that we go into executive session.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you for those who are attending in the audio version.
Okay, now let me tell you about Cameron really quick.
So let's stop it right there.